able to share what it was like, what I did and what I'm like now. I started my life in 1955, as an 8.5-pound baby, back when little girls were 6.5 pounds. And I'm a first-generation American on both sides of my family, one side being Italian, the other side being Portuguese. And I hear stories of my Italian grandmother feeding me spaghetti at 2 weeks of age. So, my brother, who is about 3 years older than me, was a very picky eater. And for an Italian family, that's just unheard of. So I was a welcomed member of the family because I apparently liked food from the very beginning. I didn't really identify my issue until I was older. And looking back at some of the behaviors that I had, I can really tell that I was a compulsive overeater. And food in my family really equated to love. There was what probably today would have been considered physical abuse of my, especially my mother, side of the family. But by the time she was born, my uncle was born in Italy, and my grandfather then came to the United States. So it took about 8 years to get the family over here. And then my second uncle was born about 8 years later, and then my mom was a change of life baby, which was about 8 years later. So she did not really get the abuse that my uncles did, but because of the structure of the family, food really was an important part of what history there was. Thank you. I forgot to tell you the qualifying part because this wasn't here. So anyways, I'm Linda Jones. I've lost about 110 to 115 pounds. I've been in program since October 22nd of 2016. So going on 2.5 years of constant weight, stabilizing of my weight. Why I came into the program was that I had lost about 90 pounds. I had put 40 pounds back on, and I was a child who was in a pay and weigh program when I was 12 years old. So I knew what that meant. I knew that that meant that not only was I probably going to be a little, not just a little under 300 pounds if I didn't do something different, but I probably would have been 300 pounds because I was very close before I took that weight off. So I came into the program out of desperation because I knew that I had to do something. And I'm very emotional. That's the Italian side of me. So my voice will crack during this presentation, I can guarantee you. I probably won't full out cry, but it's just who I am. And for the longest time, that didn't feel comfortable. But it feels comfortable now. It's who I am. And if it makes you uncomfortable, that's not the intent. So I'll do a disclaimer there. So I came into this program just knowing that that's the direction and the trajectory of what was going to happen. So anyways, here I am, having never kept weight off for more than 2 seconds. I literally would usually go to weigh-in pays on Mondays. I would eat all weekend. I would starve myself on Monday. And I'd go weigh in, and as soon as I was done weighing in, I'd have a big dinner. And I was very successful at that. I lost lots of weight just by maintaining or restricting myself before I would weigh in. Don't ask me how that worked, but it did. But I never kept it off more than a nanosecond. And so the fact that it's been 2.5 years to have this weight off is a miracle. It also is a miracle that I don't weigh myself because that scale told me what direction to go in. If the weight was down, then I could go out and binge. If the weight was up, then I would just say, well, what the hell? You know, I already blew it, so I'll just eat. So I lived and died by that scale, and literally, you know, until now I really didn't know I was dying, but I was slowly killing myself. And part of my issue is that I used food to prove to myself that I wasn't worth it. And so, and that what I thought the world thought of me was important. And so I was going to prove it just by slowly killing myself and disrespecting myself with food. And so for me, food has been really the way that I showed myself that I wasn't worth the time or the effort. And I slowly learned that. I'll kind of go back to my story, and that I was a child who got a lot of positive reinforcement for being a good eater. But I also was, you know, very much a child who loved being around people. And over time, you know, the focus became on what I ate, who I, you know, and then of course when I became heavy, it became, the focus became on how pretty my face was, that only if. And so, you know, I lived that story and that, those things. I mean, you know, you were who, you were what you looked like. And there was some value there. And I just got enough Portuguese in me on the other side of my family tree to say, you know, that's not okay. You can't judge me for what I look like, and you can't judge me for what you think I should be. And so I think there was a lot of combinations of crazy going on in my head between equating love with food, but also having a lot of rebellion around that, to the point where I said, no, you can't tell me what I should look like, and you can't tell me what I can eat and what I can't eat. And so because of that, in my recovery, when I first came to program, it was really hard for me because I listened to people who would say, you know, your recovery looks like no white flour, no sugar. Those things aren't a big problem in my life. And so I struggled at first to know exactly what my abstinence looked like. And so I can't tell you what my abstinence date is because I changed it so much at first, because I needed to figure out, all I knew for sure was I was gonna be here and I wasn't leaving, and that I needed to look at myself differently, and I needed the help of my higher power to do that. And so I really focused in on that, but then the part of me that lacks self-esteem kept saying, oh, but will you have long-term recovery, because you're not doing it like these other people are doing it. And if you don't do it like them, then, you know, you're gonna have a relapse someday, and that relapse is gonna be really bad. And so I didn't have a lot of confidence. And so at some point, between point A and now, I have come to understand that my abstinence doesn't need to look like yours. I don't even need to, I mean, I can define it, but I don't live by that definition necessarily, because my abstinence is that I don't use food to disrespect myself. And so my food plan obviously is different than what my abstinence is. But I will not use food in any other way than to nourish my body. I will not use it to prove that I'm not worthy. I will not use it to prove that you know, I don't have the right to exist on this world. And I will honor my body by saying, you know what? This is part of my story. I am not ashamed of the fact that I have loose skin and that, you know, I have places that hang, because if I do that, then that's disrespecting myself. And if I disrespect myself, I know I'm going back down that avenue. I'm going to be 300 pounds. I'm going to be 350 pounds. And I'm not going to be there. I don't deserve to be there. And so my struggle really is to de-emphasize the food portion of the program to some extent, because really what saves me every single day is my relationship with my higher power. It's walking through the steps, realizing and using those steps to interact with life, because what has happened over time is that I've lost the ability to interact with people. You know, I was really very gregarious and I loved people, and over time, the more I was judged, the more I pulled away from people, the more I found, total comfort in just the food that I ate, in my own world, in my own interactions with myself. You know, I spent a large portion of my 6th, 7th, and 8th grade years trying desperately to get people to like me. I guess I should have told you this at first. I'm a person who can't, like, I knit a lot, and I can't knit a pattern the way it's written on the piece of paper. I have to always add something of my own character to it. And so my story is going to intertwine. It's going to be like This Is Us. It's going to intertwine a little bit of the how it was, what I did, and what it's like now. And so I hope you can follow me. But anyway, so, you know, I really look towards what is it that my higher power is trying to teach me. And my higher power, the last speaker mentioned that, one of the speakers mentioned that, you know, it's really hard to define what that higher power is. And I guess, in some ways, I don't try, but I love the fact that it's kind of like a mystery to me. You know, I'm out there every day, before I even open my eyes, I say my prayer to my higher power that basically says, thank you for letting me wake up. Please give me the words and the actions that will honor you and me. And then I open my eyes and I start my day. And my day consists of, you know, feeding the dog first and then coming and doing either I listen to a podcast or I read a book. I write on some days. I just sit in silent time. When I go take a walk with the dog, you know, I think about the day or the day before, what happened, what I needed to learn from that. But I also really keep my eyes open to what my higher power shows me every single day. And it's a miracle in that if you look for it, the answers are there. I wonder sometimes if it was that the answers weren't there before, or was I not just in tune to them? I mean, I'll give you a great example. I was just visiting my daughter and son-in-law in Virginia. They just bought a house. And so we went to the grocery store, and we needed to buy some cookie sheets. Their cookie sheets were old when they left the other house, so they threw them away. So we get to the register, and I was going to pay for the stuff since, you know, I live free there when I go visit, so I was going to pay for the groceries and stuff. And the guy rang up one of the cookie sheets, and I immediately said, there's two cookie sheets there. And he was like, oh, thank you, you know. And so we walk out of the store, and I say to my kids, I say, you know, 3 years ago, I probably wouldn't have said that. You know, and I kind of explained a little bit about program and that sort of thing to them. So we walk home, and we all just kind of settle in for the night, and I go to bed. So as I go to bed, I take my reader that I read every night, and on March 29th of this year, in my reader, it talks about honesty. And it specifically talks about going to the grocery store and being undercharged. So I'm so excited, I'm like halfway, you know, wanting to run upstairs and wake my kids up and say, look, this is what I mean. You know, the universe, my God, will give me the answers that I need and the reinforcement that I need. So, of course, I didn't do that because, you know, I don't want them to think mom's gone totally off the hook. So the next morning I take the book up, and after we to breakfast and stuff, I'm like, you guys, you know, I want to share something with you. And I explained to them that I thought this was a God shot. And of course, they had lots of questions about what a God shot was. And so I tried to explain that to them in my thought process. And so then I read it to them. And they're just kind of like, oh, interesting. So then later on that day, my daughter says something to me of like, oh, that was really good when you read that thing to me earlier today. She said, and that's what you were trying to say last night, right? You know, about, and I said, no, honey, that wasn't something I read in the past, and it didn't explain what I said last night. It's what I read last night. You know, she thought that I had brought this back out of my, you know, the universe or whatever, out of this book that I read so long ago, and that's what I was explaining to her. And I'm like, no, 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 it went the opposite way, honey. I was explaining to you how I'm honest in my life and how my program has changed me as a person. And why it's so important. And so we were able to then have a better conversation about, you know, I mean, I was lucky. I did the right thing, right? But if I hadn't done the right thing and I read that, I then would have to have put that right in my mind to say, you know what? It was dishonest, and I would have had to go out and made an amends, or the worst thing I could have done was just felt really bad about it and then justified using that to do what I know isn't good for me. And that's how, I mean, essentially most of my life, you know, when you have the kind of dieting history I do, and you it's all predicated on reward and feeling justification for feeling really crappy about yourself. You know, that kind of situation, had I not done the right thing, I would have read it and said, see, you're no good. Just go eat whatever it is that you want to eat. And so for me, that was just like, oh, thank you. You know, because that's what this program does for me. This program allows me to see, first of all, behaviors that I've had in the past and how I use them to really promote the fact that I didn't feel good about myself. I think a lot of my behaviors in the past have been towards myself and not towards other people. And I think only because I'm a pleaser and it wouldn't have ever been acceptable to be as horrible to anyone as I was to myself. And so I think that that's the other part of this program that's really interesting, is that it's very hard when you come from a place like that and you've always kind of used yourself as the whipping post, and then all of a sudden have to realize that, you know, life is what life is, and there are some times where you need to be kind of firm and strong and say things that aren't going to be very pleasant to other people. And so, again, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions really help me navigate that situation. You know, if I have to be honest with somebody and I know that it's not something that is particularly pretty but needs to be said, I at least know that I am doing it from a place of kindness. And that there's only one side of the street that I can really affect, and that's my side of the street. How someone hears what I say to them, I have no control over. I can only say it with kindness. They get to receive it in any way that they want to receive it. And again, I think that that is something that is a byproduct of this program for me, is that it's not just about the food. It's about how I interact with society in general, how I go through my life, my work life, my family life, and say the things that I need to say to people and feel that I have the right to say that. And so, and not fear that they're going to reject me. The other thing I think that the fellowship does here is it allows you to practice, you know, those social graces that I clearly don't have anymore, and be safe. It's a safe place. And then I'm able to take those things that I've learned because I interact with you guys or I hear things in meetings that help me to understand and to go to a new level. And then I'm able to take them, and when I have confrontation at work with a coworker, or you know, I have to say, you know, no to somebody when they really want me to say yes. You know, I've had some practice at it. I've had the ability to do that over time. I think that I have some pictures here that can go around too. They said take bring pictures. I brought pictures. The other thing that really is interesting for me, again, I like to listen to things a lot. I read some and I write some too, but I'm definitely more of an auditory learner than anything, so I am definitely that person that loves to listen to podcasts and, you know, and come to meetings and as much as I can listen to people, because that's where I hear a lot of things that that kind of send me messages that of behaviors or the, what my next step is. And I think that's the other thing is that I've learned to do is I've learned to just take one day at a time. I don't need to know necessarily what's going to happen tomorrow. I do trust that it's going to be okay. And just recently I had, in my professional life, there is some upheaval and some possibilities of some changes going on. And I was really surprised by myself because my initial reaction was one of fear, which I think is perfectly normal. Just because we're in a 12-step program doesn't mean that we don't have fear. I think it means that we recognize fear, at least I do, and I don't mean to speak for anyone else in this room, but I recognize fear now, which is really important to me because I also realized that a lot of my life was spent fearing that somebody would reject me, fearing that I wasn't good enough, fearing that what I had to offer, fearing. And so I recognize fear now, and I don't think I ever recognized that before. I just took everything as, you know, like this is the way it is, and they must be true because more than one person said it, or one person said it even. And so now I can differentiate a lot more where my feelings are coming from. But fear is something that we're still gonna experience, or at least I'm gonna still experience. So I had a moment of fear, but then the miracle came in that the next thought that I had, literally 5 minutes after I thought, holy crumoly, what am I gonna do if I lose my job? The next thing that came was, you'll be okay. You will be okay. And then I actually, because I believe that even if whatever happens, the next step in my journey isn't what I think it's going to be, I'm going to be okay because I have a program and a higher power that I trust does allow me to see what next steps are, what the next right move is. And so I actually got excited, and I don't know that any of it's going to come true, but all of a sudden I started thinking, oh, you know, this might be an option or that might be an option. And I don't think that's something that would have ever come to my consciousness 3 years ago. You know, I would still probably to this day being, you know, fretting about what if this comes to fruition. And I'm not. I mean, again, I am willing to just wait it out and see. And I am willing to be okay with that. And truly okay with that. And so, again, I find that to be very fascinating. And I make a game of it. I actively look for signs now. You know, like there's a song out right now that I just, the lyrics on it, it just grabbed me. And it basically says, I'm not perfect right now, but I'm better than I was. And sometimes I still go a little bit crazy, but I don't stay there very long. And so that's where I am. I still have moments of doubts and you know, self-esteem issues, but I recognize them as self-esteem issues. I recognize the fact that that's not where I need to live, that that you know, my higher power doesn't produce. I don't think this world produces people that shouldn't be here. I think that every time we interact with a person, we're meant to interact with them, and we learn something from them. And sometimes we learn something that's negative, and sometimes we learn something that's positive. But we are just here to take one step at a time. And without that step, you can't take the other steps that you're meant to take. And so, again, when you start looking at the world, and that's what this program's allowed me to do, it allows me to look at and live life on life's terms, knowing that no matter what I'm going through today, the next step I take is going to take me to wherever I need to be. And so where I am today is where I need to be. Where I need to be tomorrow is in the future, and I don't need to worry about it. I just need to make sure that the step that's being presented to me at this moment is the step that I'm willing to look at, take, address. If it's an issue that is a defect of character, I need to be brave, and I need to be willing to look at that and be honest about it. Because that next step is dependent on it, and to some extent, that just means that my recovery is really dependent on that next step. And so, I am not willing to let my recovery be compromised by anything. But the good news is, it's not to my. I mean, I don't have control over that, because obviously, for 60 years. I didn't, you know, my life wasn't what I wanted to be. I didn't want to be 286 pounds. I didn't want to be, feel bad about who I was as a person. The one thing that I can say about my, you know, life prior to recovery was that, there was a lot of things that that I did that I won't do again, but I also think that that's what brought me to this place. And I don't know that if I hadn't lived through that I would have ever gotten to that point of desperation. And had I not gotten to that point of desperation, I wouldn't be here today, and I would be over 300 pounds and probably going towards congestive heart failure, given all the other medical things that I've had because of obesity. But none of that scared me. You know, needing to replace two knees didn't scare me. Getting diabetes didn't scare me. All of the physical things that happened to me secondarily to being obese my whole life, none of that scared me. And so, again, having the things that led up to this be there, they had to be there. Because, I mean, I'm sorry, if dying young, because one of the things that I love more than anything in my life is being a mom, and I'd like to someday maybe be a grandma. But even that did not give me enough courage to do what I needed to do around my weight. This program, the steps, the traditions, the people in this program really allow me to do that. And the only way I can do it is by doing it just one day at a time and not worrying about what the next step is. Trusting that if I believe strongly in a higher power, then I need to believe totally in that higher power, and I'm just an open vessel. I just look for and take pleasure in those days where on March 29th, I go to bed at night and I read exactly what I had just done. And I knew that I had done the right thing and I could share that with my kids. But I also know that had I not done the right thing, the program would have told me what the next right move would have been too. So I would have been okay. And for that, I really thank you. I'm done. If there's...
Minute for questions.
You talked a little bit about, a bit about honesty, and how there was a time where you might not have done the right thing. Did you find that when your food became better, you became abstinent, that the honesty happened at the same time, or? You know, like little things like in the grocery store. Did that happen at the same time, or did that happen gradually as you worked the steps? Like, were you able? I guess I'm wondering, did they have to come together, or did like one come first and then the other one follow?
Yeah. So the question is, did the honesty come at about the same time as cleaning up my food? And I can say not totally. I mean, I think that with the steps and certainly the traditions, I've been taught to be honest. But I have to say that early in my recovery, I was in a Goodwill and I found a $100 bill. And I didn't turn that $100 bill in because I justified in my mind that how would they know who the $100 bill belonged to? And I'm not proud of that, but it is what I did. I never would have been dishonest even before my recovery if it had a consequence on another person. But could I rationalize, it's $100 sitting on the floor of the Goodwill. Of course, no one's gonna come and claim $100, right? So in my mind, I can justify that. Or when I was younger and I found a wallet and it had money in it, sending the wallet back and keeping the money. Yeah, I did that. And so I think that they did not come obviously at the same time. If I found that $100 bill today, would I have turned it into the Goodwill person, and then if somebody came and asked for it, it would have been theirs? Yeah. But I think that that's what the steps have taught me. That's what my higher, belief in my higher power has taught me, is that, I had trouble when I first came to program and it says that something about, it doesn't matter, like why we're here or that sort of thing. And I at first I was like, well, of course it matters why we're here or whatever. But I think that it's one of those things that you've got to do this slowly, and you've got to take the steps when they come. And it's self-preservation. I mean, I was really offended when they said that we're people who are self-centered, because I never really at all thought of myself being self-centered. I mean, I've always been a fairly giving person, but I do understand that now. It's not that I at all was self-centered, I was self-absorbed for the protection of myself. And so I thought I could rationalize anything. I could say, that could have been someone's last $100. That they were going to pay their rent with. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the belief in right and wrong that my higher power has given me and the traditions in this program have taught me. There are consequences in everything we do, and we can rationalize all we want, but at the end of the day, our decisions that we make are life or death decisions, because if we don't choose to honor ourselves and we are dishonest, eventually that's going to eat us up and we're going to start eating. And so I think that that's, it, in some ways it's a selfish thing that I became more honest, because I, like I said, I am not going back. I am, and again, I say that, but then I also know that it's a day by day thing. But there's a part of me that just, wants never to go back. And again, to some extent, I know I don't have control over that. So, you know, we say one thing, but we also realize the other. I don't want to do anything that could tip me over. And I pray every day that this day is going to be a day of abstinence, and that's all I have. But part being honest really does help to at least keep me on that side of the track, that I don't have to regret anything. I don't have to eat over anything. I don't have to use food to punish myself. And so that's why I need to be honest. Thanks for asking the question.
Thank you for your story. That was really powerful. You said you were a yo-yo dieter, and you know, with so much weight loss. I mean, I know that for me, when I was losing weight, it was very emotionally hard, and I wanted to crawl right back into the food and become invisible. So, how did you deal with becoming invisible? Like, you know, I always felt invisible when I was big, and so how did you deal with becoming visible emotionally and just not, you know, going the other way?
So the question is how I dealt with becoming emotionally visible, I think.
With your weight loss.
With my weight loss, yeah. That's a hard one for me, and I don't know that this answer is going to answer it exactly, but I'll let you know. And this is the maverick in me, I think, is part of the, I'm going to preface my answer with, this is the maverick in me. There's a part of me that says it should not matter what my body looks like in terms of how the world treats me, how I deal with my emotions. And my emotions have a lot to do with how people perceive me, so it's a round robin. There's a part of me that resents the fact that now people open the door for me. I'm sorry for the two guys that are in here, but that guys now actually open doors for me. Why didn't they open doors for me when I was 286 pounds? I'm now visible, where I really felt like when I was heavy, I wasn't visible. In groups, my voice, I think my voice is so loud because I spent a lot of time not feeling like people heard me. And so I have a strong opinion, and I've learned to do that. But I also think it was a self-preservation thing. So I feel like now I don't need to, there's not a physical barrier. I mean, part of my fat was a physical barrier. I didn't want anyone hurting me anymore. I was done with it. You know, I was done begging for people to be my friend. I was done. And so the fat was an insulator. And now I don't have that insulator. But I do have I have to do a prayer or two, because I do have resentments that people treat me differently now that I'm thin. So hopefully that answered your question.